This is Robert Kurtz, editor of Becker's ASC Review and Becker's Hospital Review. Today I am joined by Hugh Morgan, director of quality assurance for Somnia Anesthesia. I'll be asking Mr. Morgan five questions pertaining to the topic of the CMS conditions of participation requirements for anesthesia. Hugh, thank you for taking the time to speak with me to share your expertise with our readers.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate the introduction and the opportunity to speak on the topic.
My first question for you today is, can you provide a brief overview of the CMS conditions of participation requirements for anesthesia?
Sure. A brief overview, really in short, is that the CMS conditions of participation are the regulatory standards that are required if a health organization, to include hospitals, ASCs, physicians, provide services to Medicare and Medicaid patients and, of course, bills for those services. So for hospitals, this is 42 Federal Register 482.52 in the State Operations Manual. And really, these conditions cover everything from who is eligible and licensed to provide services to how they are credentialed, the service parameters, and even clinical documentation requirements. So pretty comprehensive. And contrary to popular belief, CMS is really not in the business of dictating practice of medicine, but rather establishing kind of the framework of universal standards and the regulatory parameters that really guide practice and services that are delivered. So, and a component of these conditions of participation are called interpretive guidelines, which is kind of interesting title because it almost suggests the possibility of kind of personal interpretation and variability, but clearly not the case at all. These interpretive guidelines are really intended to provide the health service areas and medical specialties, such as anesthesia, with their specific regulatory standards and practice parameters. Most of these current standards have really derived from either professional societies, such as the American Society of Anesthesiology, or through the Joint Commission via CMS's deeming authority, whereby the Joint Commission Accreditation Survey is essentially one and the same now with a CMS survey. So the conditions of participation are typically updated by CMS on an annual basis, with other updates periodically released throughout the year if there are any sorts of updates or to clarify prior releases. And really, when we talk about anesthesia, the recent CMS conditions of participation update that probably presented the most significant and highly debated changes for anesthesia in recent memory came in the December of 2009 release, when CMS actually released several new changes to the anesthesia standards to include the independent practice for CRNAs administering labor analgesia, and perhaps the biggest change in which anesthesia is now responsible for all anesthesia administered throughout an organization or a hospital, be it in, again, a hospital or an ASC facility. So what does that mean? Well, essentially, that anesthesia, not the organization, must now develop the policies, procedures, and protocols that govern who and how anesthesia is administrated by non-anesthesia providers in all of the various care areas throughout the hospital. So be it in the ER or the cardiac cath lab or endoscopy, anywhere throughout the facility where a non-anesthesia provider is administering anesthesia, that now has to be overseen by the anesthesia department or group or service at that facility. The new standards also better defined the often debated levels and continuum of sedation and the requirement for anesthesia to really oversee and monitor the delivery of what they call procedural sedation in those areas. As of now, the ICUs have been excluded because those are really areas where, you know, they're delivering what's called maintenance sedation, typically ventilator-controlled patients by qualified intensive care providers. So this really has not touched the ICU area as of yet. So amongst really the other important pre- and post-operative anesthesia documentation changes that were also reflected in this December 2009 conditions of participation update, really that document kind of affectionately became known as the sedation policy, and one that is really highly visible and causing a lot of discussion amongst the industry.
Who does this rule affect and why?
Really, Rob, it really, again, applies to any care organization where anesthesia services are provided to Medicare and Medicaid patients. And really, it's that simple, that this is a document and a requirement that is applicable across the board to those types of facilities.
If this rule is not fully enforced by hospitals and administrators, can you speak to the potential risk to their patients and the organizations itself?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, the risk to the organization is really pretty straightforward, in that a violation of these conditions or guidelines really can effectively revoke a CMS contract, which can be financially devastating since, as we know, Medicare and Medicaid patients typically account for, upwards of 50% or more of most organizations' payer mix. So, to have your contract at risk is of tremendous importance for hospitals and ASCs. And, of course, CMS or the Department of Health violations, as we know, have been known to kind of immediately close the doors to facilities for these sorts of violations. The risk to patients is honestly just as significant as violations likely result in compromised quality and safety of care, since these conditions and guidelines are really founded in, again, evidence-based medicine and universally accepted practice standards that, again, derive from professional societies such as the American Society of Anesthesiology.
What challenges might hospitals and administrators face in attempting to enforce this rule?
Yeah, that's, again, a great question, Rob. I mean, the challenge of compliance with the COPs and interpretive guidelines are much the same as the challenges as it relates to kind of the current landscape of healthcare reform, and that transparency and accountability are critical to success. I think for years, anesthesia has kind of sort of flown under the radar for regulatory and accreditation agencies, and mostly because they really didn't know how to approach the in-depth kind of clinical aspect of anesthesia. So what happened is that anesthesia typically just got lumped under the OR or perioperative services standards for what they call local determination, or really, you know, left up to each organization to really develop the policies and procedures to guide practice at their facility. Thus, the onus or the challenge really fell to that organization to come up with the appropriate standards for anesthesia to include the sedation guidelines that would ultimately kind of pass survey muster if the Joint Commission or CMS walked in the door. Clearly, this is no longer the case, right? Anesthesia is now, under these conditions, responsible to be the subject matter experts to develop the policies and procedures that govern the delivery of anesthesia throughout the entire organization, regardless of if it's an anesthesia provider or a non-anesthesia provider. So what does that mean? Well, first and foremost, it means the continuous review of all the credentials and privileges of the non-anesthesia providers who are providing anesthesia, but also developing some sort of a competency assessment tool to evaluate the outcomes in those care areas where non-anesthesia providers are providing anesthesia care. And it also means developing evidence-based medicine, PNPs, right? The policies, the protocols that universally guide the sedation services at that facility. Now, this, of course, as we know, can be a political landmine since many non-anesthesia providers, to include physicians, have really been safely and effectively providing anesthesia sedation for years. So approaching them to sort of test out their practice knowledge, well, that's probably not going to be, you know, well received. But be it as it may, this is a new requirement. It's an existing requirement, I should say. And fortunately, the American Society of Anesthesiology has developed standard tools and resources to assist organizations and anesthesia groups in addressing these new requirements. I think the other challenge, Rob, lies in simply keeping up to date with the latest requirements from CMS, because they change at least annually and sometimes more throughout the year. I have a copy of the proposed 2012 update that will become final and released likely in January of 2012, and it essentially continues to clarify much of the language around the sedation issue, the timing of pre- and post-operative anesthesia evaluations. But probably the one significant update that's occurring in the 2012 update is that anesthesia must now develop a comprehensive, what they call QA/PI program, Quality Assessment Performance Improvement Program, that really reviews and approves any and all untoward events involving the delivery of anesthesia by non-anesthesia providers. So again, it's this clarification of the oversight role that anesthesia now has in the entire facility. Of course, this can also be a political landmine because it really involves anesthesia in kind of a true watchdog role over the other physicians and nurses who, again, are providing sedation throughout the organization.
My final question for you is, what then can hospitals and administrators do to overcome the challenges you just discussed?
Well, I think, you know, hospitals and health organizations really need to first establish good, transparent partnerships with their anesthesia service so that there is really a mutual awareness and accountability, not only for compliance with the conditions of participation, which are critical, but really for every other aspect of the anesthesia practice, to include the operational aspects of the coverage and the staffing, to financially the costs and the revenues, and also, you know, the ever-important quality components, that all of which really are directly and significantly affecting the bottom line, right? I mean, whether it's with compliance with SCIP measures, which, oh, by the way, are now the value-based purchasing measures, and, of course, you know, again, these tie directly to the hospital's bottom line. Somnia just recently produced a white paper on the tremendous impact that anesthesia has on the hospital's bottom line through value-based purchasing. So this is key for hospitals and organizations to really seek the trusting long-term partnerships with anesthesia services that have the right focus and commitment, and more importantly, the resources to really ensure long-term success in this new era of health reform, accountability, and transparency.
Thank you, Hugh, for your time and insight.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Learn more about Hugh and Somnia Anesthesia at www.somnia, that's S-O-M-N-I-A, anesthesiaservices.com, www.somniaanesthesiaservices.com, or you can contact Hugh directly at hmorgan, M-O-R-G-A-N, at somnia, S-O-M-N-I-A, Inc., I-N-C, .com, or by calling 201-400-9795. If you have any feedback on this program or requests for future podcast topics, please email me at rob, R-O-B, at Beckers, B-E-C-K-E-R-S, A-S-C, .com. That's rob at Beckers, A-S-C.com. And please make sure to regularly visit Beckers ASC Review at www.beckersasc.com and Beckers Hospital Review at www.beckershospitalreview.com for the latest business, legal, and clinical news and guidance for ambulatory surgery centers and hospitals and health systems. Thank you for joining us.